Hi, Heather.
Hello, Marley.
Welcome to Art Matters.
It's been fun watching you running around here trying to line up all the technology for this decidedly low-tech program.
Well, we are all lined up now. It is 10 o'clock, and we have Shannon and Katie in the studio. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, Marley. Hi, Heather.
Hi, Katie.
Hi.
Hello.
And what are we going to do today? We're going to talk about the First Friday stuff
Friday tomorrow, so we got to go over that.
Run down the First Friday things.
And those are our guests participating in that today.
And we also have, so we're going to be talking about the Watershed exhibit at the museum.
At the museum.
The continuation of that. And then we're also going to be speaking with Carrie Eggleston. Mm-hmm. About her moose hide earrings and art.
Really cool.
And Lee Horner
is going to be coming in to talk about
the school book fair, which I have some help setting up tomorrow, which is yesterday, I guess, we set it up. So it's there's a lot going on, and I guess we better get right to it.
Yeah, well, let's get to it. The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the board of directors and staff of Lincoln L Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee.
Phew,
got that out of the way.
So before we begin, thank you very much for coming. And I like to just have each of you introduce yourselves the way you want to be introduced. So maybe Shannon, go first.
Hi, I'm Shannon Donahue. I've been in Haines since 2010. And I've just since June, I've started working for the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council here in Haines, also known as SEAC, as the Chilkat Watershed Organizer.
Okay. And Katie?
I'm Katie Craney. I think I wear many, many hats, but I'm an artist, and I've kind of collaborated with Shannon for this exhibit at the Sheldon Museum.
So my first question for you, and I know this might be fairly basic, but I remember when the Tokchinook Watershed Council was first formed, I was like, what is a watershed? Is it just the river and the wet parts? And then seeing the exhibit, now obviously I know a little bit more about it, but could you explain just what exactly the watershed around here is, what that word means?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Heather. Watershed has a few different definitions, but the what we're talking about here specifically is the term watershed refers to a waterway, for example, the Chilkat Waterway, the Chilkat River, and sort of the whole area of land, all of the water drains into that waterway. So it's that area, but it's also all of the connected natural systems within that area as well. The organisms, the hydrology, and the people are part of the watershed as well, and we are connected to all of those natural systems. So that's kind of the very literal definition. But the other definition that we're talking about here is kind of more of a conceptual idea of a watershed moment. And so the idea of this show was both to celebrate the ecological sort of integrity of the watershed, what makes this place so important just for what it is. But also, we're trying to sort of get people thinking that way, that this watershed is very important just for what it is, in addition to the wonderful resources that we get from it, the salmon and the natural resources. So we're trying to precipitate this watershed moment where we sort of shift from thinking about this area from purely consumptive, utilizing the resources, which is certainly an important way to think about it, but also just thinking about it as just something that is really special just for what it is.
So the watershed is really place. It's just this place. Is there anything here that isn't part of the watershed?
Well, we have, various watersheds here, because not all of the area, where we live is all draining into the Chilkat. We have other watersheds based on other rivers. But there's, really nothing within the Chilkat Valley that's not part of the watershed.
Right. And so then the exhibit is just titled Watershed. It's not a specific one. So it's related to, and I know Katie helped you curate it, so maybe Katie, you could explain a little about how, the pieces and the suggestions you made to artists and what exactly the images there or the sculptures, what's at the exhibit reflects the watershed or a watershed moment.
Yeah, well, it seems like from my experience and how this kind of all came to be, it was more a reaction to some things that were happening here in the valley and different ways that people wanted to use the valley or see it be used. And So I made an art piece kind of reflecting the timber sale that's happening. And so that's kind of what got me thinking about, like, well, we all use this place. How do we use it? And why? What makes it important and what makes it special? And we all have our own perception of that. And so that's kind of where I was coming from. And then Shannon and I sat down at dinner one day and we're like, you know, this would be a really interesting question to put out to artists in the Valley and just see, like, how do you perceive this place and why, you know, why do you use it? How do you use it? All of those certain kind of questions. And so Shannon kind of spearheaded approaching artists. We kind of made a list of people that we thought would be interesting voices to portray. And I think a lot of times art is a way to use your voice without actually maybe using words. And it's a way for us to be able to talk about something without necessarily saying it. And so Shannon kind of took the ball and we decided to do this show. And Shannon, maybe you can talk a little bit more about some of the pieces.
Sure. So we've done this show in two phases, the sort of September phase and the October phase. And part of that reason was because we had a really quick turnaround time for this. I think it was probably early to mid July when we had that dinner when we came up with this idea to do an art show. And then you know, we were trying to think about, you know, what kind of a time frame to do it in. And there were a couple different things going on. You know, the show is. One of the things we wanted to do was invite very influential people, very, you know, elected officials, leaders, people who make policy decisions, to sort of just get this idea into their you know, in front of them that this place is very important just for what it is, in addition to the resources. And so we were anticipating having some activity around the negotiation for the timber sale right around this time of year. And so we sent invitations to the Board of Regents. To try to bring them to the show. We didn't hear anything from them. You know, they're all very busy people from, you know, who live across the state, but we did kind of at least want to get that idea in front of them and other people who are making decisions, you know, not to advocate for any specific thing, but just to show that there are a lot of different ways to look at this place. And so because of that, we wanted to do the show, you know, very soon in September and October. And then some space became available at the museum for this time frame. And so we brought together a group of artists who were able to get work together for the month of September who were really interested in this. And then there were other artists because of the short time frame that needed more time. And so we thought, well, why don't we bring in some additional artwork in October, and that will help to sustain interest for the two months of the show and give artists more time to bring in some work.
Now, Katie, when you talk about no art inspired by different events or plans or outside proposals. The work that you do isn't representational. It's not like you're doing a bunch of trees or, you know, whatever. How do you use your materials and mediums to express? Is it color? Is it shape? How does that work? How do you make those decisions?
Well, a lot of it is just, that's a really good question. And at the core of everything that I think all artists kind of deal with is materials and why. Why do you make what you make? And a lot of what I do is using the resources around me. So I use scrap metal from a lot of times the recycling center or whatever I find in somebody's scrap free pile on the side of the road. I'm the one there digging through your stuff. and so that's really important to me is reusing the things that are already here. And there's so much material in this world. We don't need to keep continuing to make stuff that we already have. Why don't we repurpose it? So that's part of the discussion. But then the other part of what I put on top of that metal is more abstract, and I tend to be a little bit more ephemeral with some of my ideas, and I do use local materials. So I use a lot of blueberry dyed gauze and paper, and I pick the blueberries right from my home, like right in front of my, you know, right in our land. And then I also use found objects and things that I connect with or things that are visually interesting. Like I see a salmon tail bone or something that looks like, oh, I like that. I don't want to draw it. I want to use it as it is because I think that is beautiful. And so those are just some of the some of the ideas that I bring into my work. A lot of it's just a process of elimination and figuring out how to make something attach with wax.
So do you think that an art piece can help people see something that is right here in front of us all the time, the watershed, the place we live, the ground, the water, the sky, the trees, you know, everything, differently after going to an exhibit like this?
Yeah, I think so, especially in this exhibit. Shannon and I were both pretty surprised at, although we had curated it, we didn't really give anybody limits or parameters or colors or a theme, really, other than, like, how do you connect with this place? And I think the pieces really show that in a way that we could have never put together ourselves. It's very, it flows really well, as a watershed, what you would hope would do. But maybe Shannon could embellish on that a little bit more, just on how the pieces came together. And
yeah, it's been, it has just been such a really interesting process to see this evolve. You know, as Katie mentioned, we didn't, you know, tell people what to do. We just sort of told them, you know, what we were aiming to do, you know, the sort of overarching concept and the way that we were just trying to get people to think about this place. And we were kind of surprised, you know, once we got all that artwork together, especially with the quick turnaround, we didn't necessarily know what the pieces were going to be. We had some, you know, general descriptions from the artist, but we didn't even see most of the pieces until it came time to install them. And so then we had a giant, massive day getting ready and figuring out. Katie is really the mastermind behind how installing the show and how putting the works all together, you know, happened. But we were very surprised that even though the artwork is very diverse, it's all different media, and you know, some of it is, you know, kind of more representational photography, some of it is more abstract. But still, once we had everything installed, we looked around and we were just, wow, it looks like these were all chosen specifically for the way they fit together. And the, you know, the first phase of the show was all very similar tones, kind of more muted earth tones, kind of cool tones. And then the additional artists that we've brought in for this month, that people have not yet seen their work, this is all new work, is very, very bright and colorful. And so it's been really interesting to see those artists were not, you know, to my knowledge, talking to each other, you know, about what they were going to do, but they each, you know, brought in a lot more color. And it's been interesting just having a few new pieces, how much it changes the overall, you know, tone of the show.
Well, it's the chicken and the egg thing. I mean, the reason that there are many artists here is because they're drawn to the place. And so obviously there's a deep connection there. And then I'm just thinking of the weather in the last month. It's all bright colors. I mean, it's bright blues and yellows. And if you think of right now going outside in any of the watersheds, it's just stunning. I mean, it's just been unbelievable.
That's
so
a good point.
You kind of wonder that maybe, you know, while you're sort of thinking in general of the stuff that you've done in the past, if you were bringing a piece in that you'd already created, you know, you would be thinking watershed, like typical Southeast grays and blues and rainy. And it's been so bright and dry for so a couple of months now, mm-hmm. that might have changed our view.
I think it probably did.
And it might have changed our mood, too, in terms of art that we want to put out there at the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, but can you go ahead and maybe tell us some of the specific pieces and artists to, you know, get an idea of what's there for people?
Yeah, certainly. I'll start with the second phase, since that's kind of more on my mind right now. We have new pieces from Merrick Bocart, Lizzie Jergelite, and Kelly Mitchell. And all three did paintings. And as I mentioned, they're all colorful. And those three all did sort of, you know, representational landscape paintings.
Landscape paintings.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a really, you know, really neat addition to the show that sort of grounds it in a specific place. And it's, you know, some of the work is, for example, Merrick, it's very different from a lot of the work I've seen from her before. And it's, you know, brand new. I believe all three of the artists just finished these works, you know, within the last few days. So it's it's very,
See,
very fresh.
I knew it. It's been reflected by the bright yellows and oranges.
Yeah, exactly.
And blues.
Yep. So that's, yeah, I'm really excited for people to come in and to see those new pieces and see how, you know, even just having three new pieces really does change the whole, you know, the tone of the show. We also have Jeffrey Moskowitz's maps. He has a series of five maps that came out this year that are of the Upper Lynn Canal. And so we have those as you walk into the room. That's the first piece that you'll see is Jeffrey's maps. And so that's sort of intending to ground you in the very specific place. And you can sort of look at, you know, what our watershed is, but it also shows the other watersheds in the area as well. So we can kind of look at those maps and you know, see, oh, okay, this is all the, you know, the waterways that all drain into the Chilkat River and create this watershed. And, oh, look, on the other side of these mountains, there's another watershed. And, you know, these are sort of, you know, connected, but they're also distinct.
The thing about the maps, too, is, I mean, just even if you might think to yourself, well, I don't know about art or watersheds, going to see the maps is super cool. And yeah, you see everybody standing there trying to figure out, well, now, have I been up there? And where's that? I didn't know that drained into that. And that's behind that. And, you know, trying to figure out where you are, or where you've been in different places. And it's always really cool to look at maps of our area that are, and his are so detailed and topographic, and that it's, I noticed at the first opening, there was just a lot of people standing around the map trying to figure out stuff and and get our bearings literally on the map. And it's a great addition to it.
And it also allows people to share stories. It really sort of, you know, I've seen a lot of people both there and then over at the cafe where they're also displayed. I've seen people standing there for, you know, ages just pointing out places and telling a story about this adventure they had here, or this place that's really special to them that they've been talking about. Now they can mm-hmm. show somebody exactly where it is. So it's been really neat as a conversation starter. And that really was, you know, the thing that impressed me the most about our September 1st Friday opening was that, you know, we had a really fantastic turnout, and I really want to thank everybody who came out and everybody who contributed artwork. But what was so impressive to me was that people stayed and had conversations, and the work sparked these really interesting conversations a lot about our sense of place and our connection to it. And, you know, part of that is around Jeffrey's maps that we had people, you know, all kind of congregating, and that allowed them to sort of have a place to be like, hey, look, that's that place. And I did this, you know, really great, you know, adventure here. I had this experience with wildlife or, you know, this incredible place, or, you know, the snow that year or whatnot. And then moving around the room, seeing all of these, the ways that people interpret the watershed in very, very different ways. You know, we had a piece from Alan Jones, which is this really, it's a large ceramic piece that's called Anemone. And it's, you know, that's, you know, your marine life. And then we have some salmon, some fish prints from Lindsay Johnson, you know, so we have things that are, you know, actually in the water. But then we have other pieces, you know, that refer kind of more to the, you know, the natural systems or the other organisms, you know, the sort of the terrestrial environment, and just the way that all of those things come together.
The other thing too is there's a literary connection, really, because each of the pieces have an artist statement that is more to do with place and what it means, or memories, or, and they're really well done, and like they're almost like little poems or short little essays, and they're all around. And I think there's a, you know, a component that way of communication, where that artists, you don't often see that next to a picture, what it means to me or why. And that's just interesting for anybody who wonders what inspires art or kind of what's in the heart of the thing.
Yeah, I think the visual is just as important as the words that you use to talk about it. And I think that was maybe Shannon's. Was that your idea to do that? And that was really great, because I all of a sudden I get a message from Shannon like, hey, can you just tell me what you think of, why did you do this? Mm-hmm. And it was really amazing to see what people had to say, because you can look at something and think it's lovely, and but I think sometimes things get lost, and having those words next to it kind of puts it more out there of the importance of it.
I think too, you know, with art, for me, not being a visual artist, I like to understand the process or what's behind it. And I recognize that obviously a piece of art, I bring to it what I want to see behind it too. And that's the interactive, that's the art of it, you know, the spirit of the thing. But it's also very instructive, especially in a museum setting, to have a little note from the artist that helps guide me in my thinking as I look at it, or think about the artist in relation to the piece. Mm-hmm. So I like to learn a little bit when I go in, and that I just found that to be fascinating.
Yeah, I think it adds a lot to the show.
Yeah, and now Katie, too, before we get going here, You also, congratulations, because you have a Thank piece, of, a series that you just did on Alaska writers and their words and you know, it somehow inspired you. And one of those pieces from Joan Kane, real well-known poet, is going to be in the, what is it, the All Alaska Biennial Juried Exhibit?
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
It's the All Alaska Biennial, and it's at the Anchorage Museum. I think that's the first time I've applied for this show, and it's every 2 years, it's biennial, and they select a different juror each time, and so the piece I submitted was from a series that is actually traveling around the state a little bit. It's called Landfalls, a dedications to Alaska women writers and storytellers, and I had 13 pieces in that show, and I just decided, well, I should apply, see why not. And the piece that is in the show is, it's called With It We Are Joined and Continue. And it's a line from one of Joan Kane's poems called Anchorage in her first book of poetry, The Cormorant Hunter's Wife. I encourage everyone to to read her words. They're extraordinary. She's Inupiaq and she lives in Anchorage now. But her family ties go to the Nome area, King Island, and Mary's Igloo is where her ancestors are from. And so she's very tied to place and her culture, and she's trying to figure out how to tell that story. And I'm just really inspired by her, along with all the other artists or writers that are in that show. But that piece in particular, I'm very excited to see it continue on. So I don't know if I'll get to Anchorage.
Do you think we'll ever get to see the exhibit here in Haines?
I've been trying to figure out a time, and I think it'll happen. I just don't know when.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Okay. Well, thank you both very much for coming in. And I look forward to seeing the continuation of the Watershed exhibit. It'll be up through?
Through the beginning of November.
Great. Well, thanks very much.
Thank you for having us.
We'll get to Carrie Eggleston next.
Awesome. Thank you, Shannon Donahue and Katie Craney, for coming in. And their work will be at the Sheldon Museum tomorrow. I can't jump high, but I hear all the notes. I can't be you, no. I can't be you, but I can be true, though.
Well, Carrie Eggleston is here next, and Carrie is, Carrie, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, I grew up in Haines. Professionally, I'm a linguist. Most of my work has been on documenting the Tlingit language, working with elders. I moved back to Haines last winter with my family, and now I'm doing some work for the Alaska Arts Confluence and making earrings and being a mom.
Being a mom, busy with busy children.
Yes, very busy.
Now, you're also a moose hunter, and that's interesting, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because we can share some experiences up the Chilkat River this season. But you've got art, moose hide earrings, that are made from a tanned moose hide.
Yes.
So tell me about how you decided to come up with this.
Well, I guess a couple factors contributed to making earrings. I had the good fortune last winter of taking Lena Stanner's high school art class for one semester, and that just really gave me confidence to be creative, and I learned lots of great skills, and she was just so supportive and encouraging. And I had a moose hide from a moose I had shot several years ago, and then made a couple pairs of moccasins out of it, and then started having kids, and the moose hide got put away for several years. After we moved to Haines, I found myself with a little more time and space to be creative, and I pulled out the moose hide, and the idea of earrings came to me. So I just started playing with different shapes and sizes and embellishments and things. So
they're beautiful. Carrie's got some. She brought them, and she's wearing some, which are fabulous. But the it really fits in with the watershed and the whole discussion of place and our relationship to it. They're displayed on a little piece of bark, and then there's a little wire that is hanging through the bark, and then they're the one that I'm looking at. They're sort of shaped like an arrow, a point, and has copper embellishments and a little bit of chain on it, but maybe about an inch long. They're light.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful color.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are those hooks copper as well?
The hooks are actually niobium. They're a hypoallergenic metal, which only matters to some people. But
it was important. That's also why I was asking. Now that I'm looking at them, I can see that they are a different material. These are beautiful as well.
Yeah. And the color, the hide, when I had it tanned, it was a really light tan color. But I've painted them all with olive oil, and it gives them kind of a rich, darker look to them. I did want to say something about the bark. One of my missions in this endeavor is to have a no-waste packaging mission. The bark, the earrings are hanging from little pieces of bark. They're serving as earring cards, and I write on the back of the bark, my name and all that. And then I'm making newspaper.
I see the boxes are made out of the Chilkat Valley News.
Little jewelry boxes out of old Chilkat Valley News issues. And then old man's beard instead of tissue paper.
Carrie, that is, these are just the beautiful presentation. What a nice thing.
Thank you.
A nice gift for yourself or for somebody else. So
thank you.
Tell me about the moose hunt where you got this moose.
Well, it was before I had kids, so it's probably 7 or 8 or 9 years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
I've been hunting up the Chilkat River with my parents and husband for lots
Since
of years.
Since you can remember.
Yeah. This particular moose I got right near our camp. There's a swamp right by the camp, and I can't even tell you what day of the hunt it was, but he was a nice legal bull. Presented himself very
was
near.
Was he tree brow tines, or was do you remember? Or was he a fork? Or
oh man, I think he was.
No, this
a
is
fork.
Coming right off.
I think he was a fork.
Uh huh.
Yeah. So.
And just walked right in.
Yeah, he just walked right in, and
were you calling him?
Yes, we were calling him.
Was it cow call or like a bull calls or a combination?
Bull calls.
Right. And
yeah.
Do you want to tell people kind of what those are for?
Well, there's different options. You know, you can grunt like a bull. You can shake the brush. My dad often uses a plastic lawn chair that he rubs on a tree. It sounds just like horns. Or we also have a shed camp we use.
And a shed for an antler that's been shed.
Right, yeah.
Ah, right.
I was with somebody, and I was with a friend in an airplane once going into the airport, and they were looking out the window, and they kept going, there's a shed down there, there's a shed down there. And I'm like, shed? I'm looking for the shed, the building. Yeah. And I'm like, no, I got to go back and get that shed. And it was the antler. And you can use it, obviously, for all kinds of things, but it's nice to have one around a tree stand.
It is, yeah.
They're a handy attraction. Yeah. And did you go up? Were you moose hunting this season so far?
Yes, I did. I went up for a couple different 3-night stays. This year, I only saw cows.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's been up there a lot more, and my husband, they've seen lots of different bulls, but no legal bulls. So.
Yeah, we were up in a similar area there, and it was very exciting. There was a lot of activity, but nothing that was legal.
Yeah.
And for us, it was the hunt of the sounds.
Right.
We heard so much. And did you hear? It was just the noisiest that I'd ever heard it. And we had a funny experience where we walked into one area and we're like, oh, geez, there's already a hunter here. And, man, they're just making a terrible cow call. You know, that's like, well, they're running everything off. And then it was a cow that came out.
That's funny.
So it was like, it was pretty funny. And then, and it happened more than once then, because the same with when you were describing the bull sounds with the shed and the breaking of branches. And, you know, that's really loud. And when you're tiptoeing around and then you decide to do that, it's kind of a, it's a big decision to make. Okay, we're going to make a lot of noise and see if this brings them in, or are we going to just send everybody away yeah. for miles and miles and they'll never come back? And so, you know, when someone starts to do that, it's a commitment.
and yeah, it's true.
And so you walk in, and the same thing. We walked into one place that we'd go to look, and we hear that, you know, and we're just like, oh, no, that guy's running everything out forever. And sure enough, out comes a bull with all the junk in his antlers and, you know, shaking and breaking branches. So it was a... But I love the idea that you used a tanned hide, and I haven't seen that. I wonder, you know, when we hunt, sometimes people always ask, well, what about the hide? And we tend to leave the mm-hmm. hide in the field, you
yeah.
know? And because tanning them is, I don't know. I've just, and so I'm curious about that process and how you decided to do that.
Yeah. Well, I've always liked working with leather. I've been into making moccasins and, I guess it's just a material that has always
yeah,
attracted
beautiful.
Me, so yeah. I thought it would be a good opportunity to save the hide and do something with it. So I sent it down to a place in Marysville, Washington. Just mailed the whole thing. I didn't
for
really
fur
have to
and everything.
Do,
yep. You scrape it some, like, but not...
Yeah, scrape a little bit, but then you just put it in a bag and in a box and send it down, and a couple weeks later you get it back all tanned. So,
and how big is it? How big? I mean, it must be really big.
It's pretty big. I mean, the width is like a, you know, a single bed duvet or something, but not quite that long. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a large hide.
And you're just gradually, and the earrings take up very little. I mean, you have enough in that hide to make earrings for the rest of your life?
A lifetime supply.
Wow. Well, geez, Carrie, it's pretty neat. The whole thing is neat. And then I have another, can I ask another question
yeah.
for you? Because you're a linguist, and you were talking about a linguist and talking about language. And I, and there's, you know, that connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking kind of about watersheds and place and place-based art. And
mm-hmm.
like yours is perfect. It's all kinds of places, even modern places with the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering if, you know, the connection with language and place. I know the library has the storyboard project, and Shannon mm-hmm. was talking about looking at Jeffrey Moskowitz's maps, and you know, there's a big part of language is place. And I also recently read that the governor has said that we're going to start using native place names and signs around the state because the languages are endangered. Is
mm-hmm.
that something you see? Will we be bringing that into our area? A question on language and mm-hmm. place, and then also
yeah.
the idea that I guess maybe sometime soon here we're going to have double names on things, won't we?
Yeah, I hope so. I would love to see that. I think it's really important to recognize the first language that we know was spoken here in this place. So,
And how much of that language then is descriptive of a place, like is based on, things like where the moose make noise or where the fish
yeah,
are or
yeah,
where
sure.
the water runs or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the entire vocabulary, essentially, you know, as far as I'm familiar with Tlingit, so much of it is about describing the place itself. And yeah, for sure. It's definitely tied in.
Well, I'm glad that you're here and a good resource for when all this starts to begin. I'm sure working
yeah.
with a lot of the local speakers and all of that involves. I know recently Evelyn Hotch passed away, and she was one of a handful, I believe, of speakers left who were, you know, Tlingit was the first language.
Right, yeah.
And talking with Joanne Elsie Spud about that, her daughter was saying that there's only maybe four or five people left in the Chilkat Valley that are, you know, speakers from childhood.
Right, right. And just in the 12 to 14 years that I've been working with elders on the language, I've you know, there's probably three left that I've worked with of, you know, over 30. So that's hard to see. But mm-hmm. I'm really grateful for the efforts that are being put into keeping the language alive. You know, Marsha Hotch has been very mm-hmm. instrumental in that, and lots of people.
Right. And they're having now, they've just started, I believe, does it start tonight? Or did it start last night? It's this week.
Wednesday, last night.
Last night. There's a
family language, class.
Yeah. Yes. And I hope that sounds like a great thing, especially yes. with start with children.
Yeah, for okay. sure.
All right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Carrie. Thanks very much for coming in. I really appreciate it. And the earrings are beautiful, and I love the whole thing.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Carrie. Thank you, Heather. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Lee Horner to talk about the book fair.
You gotta know I'm feeling love made of gold. I never loved another one, another you. It's gotta be love, I said it. You gotta know I'm feeling love. You gotta know I'm feeling love. You gotta know I'm feeling love. Made it go. I'll never love another one, another you. It's gotta be love, I said it. Might as well be in our garden. I said, I smell in the air is a dripping rose.
You can be the one for me.
Another soul to be my warden. Of anything there that's made of gold. Nothing without it. And you close your eyes to see what it's done. The body that lies is built up on looking. It's all that remains before it's begun.
This has been really an interesting program this morning, talking to everybody, and it's about to get even more interesting because Lee Horner is here, the school librarian, and to talk about the book fair.
Yes.
And I think also I'm hoping that you can help us with a little bit of shedding light on literacy and children and reading and the importance
Absolutely.
Of all these things for not just the children and their families, but as a community.
Yeah, well, I can start with the book fair. The book fair starts today. It's the Scholastic Book Fair. It's a fundraiser for the library. So the library gets a percentage of all the sales. And I use the funding for different activities in the library. It went to help match the grants I received last year for the puppet program. Any other activities, I buy books for the Tournament of the Readers, prizes for the Tournament of the Readers. Just another way to promote literacy, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's like I just left all of the first graders, and they were so excited. And the book fair is a very exciting time, especially for the younger readers, because everything is for them. You know, it's unlike when they go into another store where, you know, it's for their moms and their dads and their brothers and their sisters. But everything there is for them and at their level. And they... Like Charlie DeWitt said to me, and I asked him if I could quote him, and he said yes. Oh, I love the book fair. You have the best books. It was very exciting. And they just, the smiles on their faces and touching everything, and it's okay to touch them.
Mm-hmm. Don't touch that. Don't do that.
The other thing, I know you had a whole crew of volunteers yesterday setting up.
I couldn't have done it without my crew of volunteers.
I did a little bit in there, and it's pretty cool the way they're all so easily categorized for different. You know, so for someone even going in who wants to get a book for a child,
Absolutely.
Okay, this is 1 through 2, and this is 3 to 5.
Yeah, and I can help them guide. Yeah. The levels of books too.
The thing that impressed me was the explosion in young adult novels that are really heavy duty from nonfiction, mm-hmm. First person accounts of being in the military and in the war,
right.
to novels dealing with addiction.
And dystopian is very popular. If you don't know what dystopia is like future science fiction, Hunger Games, books that have a future that we don't really, of course, we don't know what the future holds.
Ray Bradbury.
Exactly.
Yeah, for those of us who are older, think those kind of books. But but there's so many, and they're for young people.
Absolutely.
Lots and lots of them. I wonder what that means, if it has something to do with the world that we're giving them.
Yeah, I don't know.
I wonder.
Or maybe they're just starting to, it's great. Imagining a world different than the one that we're living in, which is not such a bad thing.
No, and there's
definitely speaking from a more millennial perspective, I can guarantee there's definitely the fascination with a dystopian, like Mad Max, mm-hmm. all those sort of things, Maze Runner, all of these.
Why is that, Marley?
Oh, well.
I'm curious.
I definitely feel like there is this worry of the future looking very bleak.
Right.
Definitely with a lot of climate change worry, and this feeling that the future is sort of out of our hands. Definitely by the people that are making the decisions are so much older than the people that are going to be, that will feel them.
Mm-hmm. I think that that happens
in every
generation.
But I think the interesting thing for me, even being involved a little bit locally too, is that it's the one thing that I love dystopian novels, and that it's coming out in art and in literature. But it'd be really great if it came out in turning out to vote.
Yeah,
because shocked that that more people don't vote, and I wish we could just make it almost mandatory, but I suppose I'd get in trouble for that. But even I was just reading, like up in the Mat-Su Valley, I think there was a bunch of decisions that were made, and I think they had a 13% turnout. And it's not, and Haines, we do pretty well, we think, in Skagway at like 40% or 50%. It's still 33%. It's like, really?
Yeah.
One in three of us are voting? Like it should be more. So anyway, I hope that
it should definitely be more.
Okay.
So I did bring a couple books from the book fair that I found really exciting. Two of my favorites so far was this is a picture book on the invention of the slinky.
Really?
It walks downstairs alone or in pairs.
We know this.
And it makes a slinkety sound, and they kind of talk about that, and it's and I thought it's a wonderful nonfiction picture book on invention and how your inventions may not start out the way you planned and how they became a marvelous toy.
And it's perfect for little engineers.
Yes. another one of my favorites was last year we lost Amy Krauss Rosenthal, and she is a children's author.
Did we found her yet?
No. And she's an amazing children's author and also an NPR. She would often speak on NPR. And this was a book that was written towards the end of her life with her and her daughter. And it's written for girls. It's like a letter to girls. Dear girl, can be whatever you would like to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. I guess I'm jaded because I really love Amy Krauss Rosenthal.
Yeah. Well, and it's an important message to send
to young women.
To young women. Yeah. You bet.
But young men need messages too.
Right.
I also brought a birthday present for KHNS.
A birthday present for KH&S.
Yes. So I know both of you are experienced book fair
participants.
Mm-hmm. And as Marley growing up in the school and going to the book fair, and Heather going to the book fair with your children, I know oftentimes the posters are always a hit. Mm-hmm. But there was one poster in particular I decided to purchase for KH&S.
Let's see it.
And I'm going to hand this off to Marley, and you can open it up, and you can share, and you can put it up anywhere. And I know one DJ in particular will be very excited.
Well, here I'm removing the rubber band from the poster.
So there's posters.
There's posters.
Well.
And diaries and
good vibes.
It's a poster. It's mostly purple with blue flowers and has sort of a
it's kind of got
letter,
an old-fashioned like, wallpaper behind it.
Yeah, old-fashioned
wallpaper. It goes back to those 60s and 70s.
It says good vibes.
And
it has
vibes,
like a letterman
DJs that
print.
Are 60s and 70s. I like it. It's beautiful.
So happy birthday, KH&S. And if you need the matching diary, that's also available at the book fair.
So, Leah, I have one question for you now.
Yes.
Before you take off, because I know you're busy and I appreciate you coming over, is how important is it that we teach our children as a community that, you know, the value of literacy and the idea of even learning to express themselves in words and studying picture books? I mean, I know that's super important. I shouldn't say how important.
Well,
that's a dumb question. The question what I want to ask you is what can we do as a community to help foster reading, writing,
I would say
literacy.
Read to your children.
Mm-hmm. But what if you don't have children?
And,
what about people who are
I'm
thinking of, you know, because parents own all these things, but just as community members who want to support kids and reading and writing. Is there
I think it's valuable that children actually see their parents and community members reading. And just sitting there reading a book says, oh, yeah, I that is important. Reading is important. And I guess by setting an example.
Well, you know, the one thing that's about to happen now is, you know, that there's, I don't think it's a secret, but there's going to be some of those little libraries are turning up around town.
I've heard about this.
And the Park and Rec
yes.
committee is
I'm
working
excited.
On this. And we're going to have, you've seen those boxes in other communities where you mm-hmm. put it basically in your neighborhood or a park or a place, business, you have a little box that has
a free library.
A free library. Some,
right.
some used
and
books
I think
in
that's
it
a
that
great
you can pick
way
out
to recycle books. And get books that are not being necessarily read and get them out there, because no one's read, like in the library, you have to weed your library collection, and you're weeding them on interest and condition and circulation. It's like, no one's checked this book out in 30 years, but that doesn't mean it's not a valuable book. Mm-hmm. And just getting it out into the right hands.
Right.
Maybe in your little free library.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing, too, that I think has really been pretty neat is just the, you know, that it seems to have expanded over the years are the books at the ferry terminal, books on the ferries themselves. People leave them, and there's usually a lot of kids' books.
I like to take books out there.
And they have them at airports now, too. I've been, you know, when you go through, like, Anchorage Airport and you're waiting, there's a bookcase there in some of those areas where there's, you know, kids' books or adult books mm-hmm. or some
right.
book of poetry.
Yeah, so I guess if you're at the at the airport, having children see you reading, going through and looking at those
keeping
books.
Keep the book in your car and read it instead of look at your phone or something.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, that is all very helpful. And the hours of this book fair?
Right now, it's about 9 to 5. And next Thursday...
Will it be Saturday, Sunday, or
no? Nope, I'm not going to be there on Saturday and Sunday. But 9 o'clock in the morning till about 5 o'clock, it's open to the public. And on next Thursday, the 11th, will be the family night, and I will be there until 7 p.m. or 7:30 or however late it needs to be.
Okay.
And then Friday morning, I'll be taking it down. So Friday the 12th. So please come in before Friday the 12th.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Lee, for coming in, and thanks for the. Poster. It's lovely.
I'm glad you like it.
Thank you. I'm sure Tom and Scotty will also really appreciate it.
All right, Marley, we have to run down First Friday. It's
yes, we do.
It's been a whirlwind of
a
show. I'm maybe a little rusty because I haven't done this for a while, and it's also very interesting to talk to all these brilliant and creative people. Let's see. At Ampersand on Main Street in Haines, there's There's Russ Lyman's hand-drawn maps.
Oh, I'm really excited about this one.
It's another one of those things. And remember, we were talking about this earlier, that in your generation in school, in Miss Andreessen's class.
Yeah, she might still do it.
I don't know. I loved it. The children all had to learn how to draw a map of the world. And it started at the beginning of the school year. And by the end of the year, that was a test without looking at it. You had to do it by memory.
Yep.
And countries, rivers, mountain ranges.
Major rivers. Uh-huh. You know, it's like I think Tigris, Euphrates, and the Amazon, and the Nile.
It was a great, great exercise.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't remember if you had to remember all the countries' names, but I do. You got extra points for that, at least, or something.
Drawing a map of the world. Anyway, so Russ Lyman obviously could have done well in Miss Andreessen's class. And then Art on Main Street, Tom Ganner is having 16K shades of gray. And Tom, of course, local photographer, naturalist, and guide. And these are going to be black and white photographs, a collection that you might not normally see. As he calls them desaturated.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
They're not just from Alaska, not just from, but if you're thinking you're just going to see pictures of around here that you already know about, it's California and Arizona as well. And there will also be a video.
Oh,
display of black and white images. And Carrie is going to be at Caroline's Closet. I guess we should have said that. Her moose hide earrings, and they're very neat. The boxes I love the goat's beard.
The whole presentation.
It's a lovely, lovely thing. And there's open mic at the Pioneer Bar. Oh, at Alaska Rods, they're having a Hemp Works CBD tasting party. And they tell you that you can learn about and try CBD products.
Excellent.
And that can perhaps help you with the multitude of issues.
I guess you'll find out if you'll find out there.
If you've got something that ails you and you give that a try. So that's at Alaska Rods. The Rusty Compass will be open. Sheldon Museum, of course, the Watershed. Lynn Canal Mercantile, Lynn View Mercantile.
It's right on Beach Road.
Down on Beach Road next to the other pot shop there. they've got an end of the season sale. Big end of the season sale from 5 to 8. And there's just beautiful things in there.
Oh, yeah.
Colleen Adams has curated and done. Other things to know are that River Talk is coming up this month.
River Talk.
We start. The first one is next Thursday, October 18th. And
that'll be two Thursdays from now.
Yeah. The title is I Still Don't Know What Happened. It's a great way to begin. January 17th, How I Ended Up in Haines. February 21st, Dreams Come True. March 21st, this is my favorite one, actually. It sounded like a good idea at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And April 18th, and of course it has to be in April.
What's the last one?
I shouldn't be alive right now.
Which
we've all had, hopefully had those experiences and still are. The other thing I want to let you know is that at La Loft, they will be open, newly and gently used women's clothing. Dalton City Yarn is having a selection of hand-knitted and crocheted items by local needle crafters, plus big sale, because end of the season, 20 to 50% off. The library is also having a presentation tonight from 6:30 to 8 that fits in with the watershed stuff. Elsa Sebastian from Lynn Canal Conservation is going to do a presentation on something she calls ground truthing in the threatened Prince of Wales forest. And a year ago, she took spent a lot of time there where she grew up just to check it out and see what's threatening the forest and what's changing in her home. And that'll be an interesting presentation. Again, that's from 6:30 to 8. And one more thing I did want to tell you, I know we're getting near the end, is that the Haines Women's Acapella Chorus starting up. And I'm in that, and I love it. And just being around Nancy Nash is good for everybody. And and she directs the choir. It meets at the museum every Thursday night, 6 to 7. Pretty much punctual. Start at 6, end at 7. And Nancy has some new pieces to try out. We've got a lot of old favorites. All singers are welcome. Any woman that wants to sing, age isn't an issue, young, old, medium, and I know we can always use a few more sopranos.
Oh, yeah?
But we're kind of heavy on the altos,
The
second altos, but Nancy can make anybody into a beautiful singer, and it's just really fun camaraderie, and it's good to sing. So,
oh yeah, I love hearing the
I did want to give a shout out to Klukwan. The Jilkat Kwan Heritage Center has a coloring contest for children 12 and under, and the winner will receive a T-shirt of their choice with a Northwest Coast design of an eagle or a raven on it. And they're also going to be open on First Friday from 2 to 4. And everything in the exhibit hall, the admission is a half off.
Oh, excellent.
So if you want to go look at that screen again or take a drive up, the beautiful colors and on a lot of that lovely new pavement.
Oh, yeah. It's getting laid down now. Okay.
It might be a nice afternoon because, it's a beautiful drive out there now.
Especially
and half off. And to go into that center is, especially this time of year right now, is just spectacular.
Oh, and that's great that they're starting early. So you can still go up there and
get
back in time
at the Heritage Center. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay,
excellent.
I think that's it,
Marley.
Yeah,
that just about wraps us up. Thanks, Heather. That was great. We got so much. And
your mother, too.
Yep, full disclosure, Lee Horner, the librarian, is my mother. Excellent. Well, hope to see everyone out at First Friday and enjoy our wonderful watershed. It makes sense that that display is going to fit well together. I mean, even if you're just using the watershed as a theme, of course, no matter what you're displaying, is going to be connected.
Everything's connected, right? Isn't that what they say?
Yes,
John
it is.
Muir, you tug on one string in the universe and everything gets a tug.
Excellent. Well, okay. we'll be back next month and talk about November First Friday.
Yes. Thanks,
excellent.
Marley.
Thank you, Heather.
Okay.
And it's 11 o'clock. You're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Klukwan. Up next is the World Cafe.